Hello and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors. For each episode, we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are going back to France and look at director Mona Achache in her hit 2009 film, The Hedgehog. Returning on the show today to talk about The Hedgehog is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So all the films I've seen so far on our show, not just yours, but everybody else's, this is the one that has the most surprising endings.
Yes.
I just definitely did not see that coming at all. And I saw that, was like, what?
Yeah, it's a shocker. It definitely, I'm not sure anybody sees it coming because you don't think it's going to go that way.
Yeah, exactly. Because you think, the way it's going, it's, this person of this solitary person coming out of their shell, being more social and realize that she's a good person and she might be falling in love and, like I've seen as a mother figure to one of the people. And then boom, car crash, dead. And you're just like, what?
But that's how life really is. Yeah. It does not really follow any kind of story arc. It's full of surprises. And one of the messages in the movie is that you don't really know how much time you have, so you should appreciate every little day, every detail of every day, and every person that you know.
And but there, I will say there is one bit of foreshadowing in the film. It's when she and her and the girl, Paloma, are walking out, and she says, "Whoa, careful of that car." And that's just a little bit of foreshadowing as to what happens later on in the movie.
Well, not only that, but the homeless guy that she lets sleep in the room where the trash cans are, in the very beginning, she tells him, come inside. It's cold out. It's going to be cold out tonight.
So it was just a little bit of foreshadowing, but definitely doesn't prepare you for that. But
it does not.
But like you said, it is just kind of, this person coming out of their shadow. And you think about it, there's a lot of people like that, like the janitors or just other people who we depend on every day. We ask them to do this thing for us or that thing for us. But beside that, we kind of ignore them. We just see them as these people who help us out a little bit, but we don't really think of them much after that.
There's a saying that you can tell a lot about a person's character by how they treat people that they think don't matter. And actually, it's an interesting scene when she has cut her hair and she's got this new outfit on and she walks out with the Japanese gentleman. And she walks right by somebody who's known for years and doesn't recognize her. And that's because, as the guy tells her, because she doesn't see you. She never saw you before.
He just ignores you, just like everybody else did in that apartment. And it was interesting the way she talked about that, like, why did you that? She wanted to be the stereotype of the old janitor. She's got the cat. She's, they want to be that stereotype, but she would watch just, TV and just stay in her thing and be sort of blunt and,
rude and
blunt and rude to everybody. And she just wanted to be that stereotype. It's like, everybody is going to think of me like that already, so I might as well just act the part.
Actually, I thought it went more, it was more than that. It wasn't just that she was acting a part. It was that she knew that people would think she was being above herself or acting above herself.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
To, imply that she was intellectual, she read books. No one expects the concierge to be educated.
Nobody likes a pretentious janitor. That's
there
what
you go. Yeah, no one likes a pretentious janitor.
And so just, I know I might be dwelling on it a bit much, but the ending of the film, did you feel that it hurt? Did it take away any, I know sometimes people say an ending can ruin a movie even if the rest is good. Did it feel like that for you, or did you still like it?
I thought the ending was perfect, actually, because I think it was the only way that Paloma would have really realized what life is. Up till that moment, she's such a plucky, mature, interesting young woman. But she's got a very dark view on life, but she doesn't really understand life. She doesn't really understand what's at stake. So when she's thinking of all the ways that she can kill herself, that's a very dark subject to even start off with. But in the end, when she loses somebody close to her, I think that is a eureka moment for her. She realizes her own life is worth more than she thought it did.
Yeah, she doesn't like her life, but in the end, she's still, she's her parents are very wealthy. She's very well off. It's sort of like you don't have that. I mean, compared to what other people are going through, you don't really have that much to suffer, complain about. I mean, it seems what you're committing suicide over seems pretty petty to other people, like the Jean-Pierre guy who's actually homeless and living on the street.
Yeah, she has a definite sense of desperation, though. She is, and most girls that age are kind of melodramatic anyway. But she feels ignored as well. She's not a concierge, but she feels ignored by her family, that they don't see her.
Yeah, they just they're the neglectful parents. They're not necessarily abusive, but they just ignore him.
They just ignore her. And even when, you know, the death happens in the end, her mother can't even bring herself to hug her. Just a very cold life to live.
Yeah, and then when Renee died, when they die, the mother was like, "Who?
Who?
Who? Oh, Mr. Shaw.
Oh, yeah, that lady.
And they were talking about, she was talking about how in the early of the film, one of the tenants dies.
Yes.
And then the Renee, she talks about how, you know, my husband did all this and, you know, nobody batted an eye. I just thought it was a disruption in their daily life. But here, when the tenant dies, it's this horrible tragedy.
You know, now that I think about it, there's a lot of foreshadowing when you think about all the death piling up and the death stories.
Yeah, okay.
Including the fish.
Kind of one of those things where first time it's shocking, second, third, fourth, fifth time, not so shocking anymore.
Right, yeah. Right.
And so the fish, yeah, you talk about the fish. Did they really kill that fish?
No, they didn't kill that fish. I mean, that was one of the most brilliant parts of the movie, I thought, that she thinks it's dead because she thinks she's killed it. She flushes it down the toilet, and it ends up in Renee's apartment, which is brilliant when you think about it, because she wants so desperately to escape the fishbowl that she thinks she's living in. Mm-hmm. And she thinks there's no other way to do it than to die. And then what happens? She ends up downstairs in Renee's apartment, which is where she actually wants to be. And she can't figure out how it got there, why it got there, or why the fish is now alive in an apartment with cats.
Yeah.
By the way, it's a great cat movie. The cats in the movie are magnificent.
Yeah, you're just but that fish that swallows that pill, did that fish in there, that's not dead though? Because
you mean did they sacrifice a fish
for
and
the
then,
filming?
Then there was a stunt fish? You know, I don't know. Probably not, because there's so many rules about.
Yeah, and a lot of rights organizations would get on you, but
it was probably a plastic pill.
Okay, but the fish was like laying out like this, but
maybe it was CGI.
Okay.
CGI fish. Let's
go
with that.
I'm dwelling on it too much. But one film that felt really similar to me when I was watching this, I know you said you haven't seen it, but it was the film called The Station Agent. Now, people probably best know it as the film with Tyrion Lannister, a.k.a. Peter Dinklage, who's best known as Tyrion on Game of Thrones. But it's the story of these three people kind of coming together, very kind of oddballs in their own way. And one of them's suicidal. And, you know, one of them's very sullen and withdrawn. And sort of by coming together and being friends, they all kind of come out of their shells and they form this good friendship. So very, if like you want a good back-to-back double feature, I would recommend this movie along with The Station Agent.
Okay, I'll have to take a look at that movie.
And a little interesting tidbit, the same guy that directed Spotlight, last year's Best Picture, this was his first film. That was his first film as a director.
Oh, okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. And one criticism I would have of the film, they spend a lot of time, I do like the character of Mr. Ozu and everything, but it doesn't seem that Paloma and Renee get a lot of screen time together. They just have a couple of scenes, but they don't, like, when they spend a lot of time with Renee and Mr. Ozu, you feel that connection, that friendship, or maybe even love that's between them. But with Paloma and Renee, they just have a couple of scenes that it doesn't feel like they've been able to, the film didn't give them enough time to build that bond that Ozu and Renee had.
Well, Ozu and Renee are a different thing, I think, because that's a romance. But you do see Paloma gains access to her apartment. She shares tea and chocolate with her. Mm-hmm. They go out doing errands together. There's a couple of scenes where they're, you know, together, spending time together. And she gets to find out Renee's secrets. She gets to find out about the secret room with the books in it. Renee breaks down in her arms when she thinks that, you know, nothing's going to really, you know, she's not good enough for this gentleman who is pursuing her. I mean, I think that the moments that they choose, otherwise the movie would go on forever, are critical.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess I can see it there. I just feel like I would have liked the scene a little bit more, I guess, is my point. I know it might have made the movie a bit longer and dragged, but I guess that would have been a bit of a problem for me.
I enjoyed watching them together. They played off each other really well. That young actress is fantastic.
Yeah, her name is Paloma.
Geralt Le Guillermique, I'm guessing.
Okay, you're better at pronunciation than me, but I was looking at her. She did a great performance, but looking at it, there's not a lot on her IMDb, and just wonder just like if she's doing anything recently or if she maybe even given up acting already.
I don't know that much about her other work. I just think she's terrific in this, especially the way every time she picks up her movie camera, she has to take her glasses, you know, put them on the top of her head. And then every time she tries to take her glasses back off, they're always snarled in her hair. It's just such a real moment. That is exactly what happens.
And then, you know, one person who's not very well known, but going to somebody who is extremely well known is, once again, I'll butcher this, but Josiane Balasko.
Josiane Balasko. Yeah, she, you know, it's funny. I know this is a Mona Achachi movie. She's the director, but to me, it's a Josiane Balasko movie. She's famous for making movies about things that are kind of, you know, you've sort of heard that story, but then she's got a twist to it. Mm-hmm. So she was in a movie with Gerard Depardieu called Too Beautiful for You. And it was about a love triangle, about a man who decides his, you know, to take up with his secretary. Mm-hmm. Well, his wife is the beautiful Carol Bouquet, and secretary is dumpy Josiane Balasko, but that's who he falls for. So it's a twist on that trope.
So instead of the, you know, the somewhat homely wife and he gets the hot secretary, it's he ditches his hot wife for the homely secretary.
Exactly. Okay. Then she made a movie, which was, I think, probably her biggest hit. French Twist, for which she won a screenplay for won a Caesar for the screenplay, and it was nominated for Best Film. And in that one, it's another threesome, but this time it's a man and a wife, and she plays this plumber who shows up and starts up with the wife. So again, you know, you're not seeing that coming. And then there was a movie called Cliente, which was a movie she wanted to make, and it's about modern day people who, in order to make ends meet, one of them goes out to work as a prostitute. Except in this way, it's the man. It's not the woman. Okay. And then when the wife finds out, she has to decide, well, you know, but we really need the money. You know, it really, it's a real twist on, you know,
I won't be angry at you, honey. Just keep on, doing what you're doing.
Keep on making that money. And the interesting thing about that movie is that she pitched it and everybody said, yeah, no one wants to see that movie. So she wrote a book. And it did very well. And they said, you know,
now we want to do it.
Let's make a movie about that.
You're right after a while.
So, you know, if you've seen enough of her movies, I mean, maybe that's why I think the ending is expected in a way, because she never does anything.
She just does typical stories, but with a little
twist.
Okay. So would you say she's even more of a she's more known as a director than an actress?
Well, she's been around for a long time. In the 70s, I think in 1 year she made 7 movies.
Wow.
She's just been incredibly prolific. But as she's gotten older, she's been involved in more directing. And she is one of the, I think she's one of the principals for the French Film Festival that goes on in Richmond every year at the end of March.
Richmond, Virginia.
Okay. At the Virginia Commonwealth University puts it on every year. Okay. And she and her husband, George Aguilar, who plays her love interest in Cliente, are there every year.
Oh, okay.
And they're really, you know, an interesting couple, and they it's terrific to see them come back every year. So she's also very visible in the French film world because she's out there promoting French film.
Okay. And then I guess we'll get to the other the star of the big three is Togo Igawa, another guy I'm not – is he big in Japan or anywhere? Because I'm not familiar with him.
I'd never heard of him before either, but he was at the film festival when this movie came out, and he told the crowd that he did not know any French and that he had to say all of his lines phonetically. And I think he does pretty well. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to tell that he didn't know how to speak French. He does a terrific job.
Yeah, does a really good job. I can never learn a language. I took 2 years of Spanish. The only thing I can tell you is hola. That's a different story.
That's a place to start.
But and that character, Mr. Ozu, I mean, that's got to be – that absolutely has to be a reference to Yasujirō Ozu, who we talked about a while ago with Tokyo Story. I mean, not only that, but they watch an Ozu film. They watch the Munakata sisters, and she asks him, like, by the way, would you happen to be related to the director? And, you know, and there's even like the, you know, we talked about the tatami mat shot where it's this really low shot of people sitting down. There was that shot. So I wonder feel that like his whole character is a reference to Yasujirō Ozu. It has to be.
I'm guessing it's got to be a something for all of us film fans.
It's like, hey.
And he's such a great character, and he has such a wonderful apartment, you know, with the toilet that plays Mozart when you sit on it. Yeah. And the super elegant cats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting toilet. I'm not sure if that would work for me. That'd make me feel uncomfortable, but...
Oh, it's a thing. It's very popular in Japan. Yes, it's not... That doesn't only play music. It's heated.
That just makes me feel uncomfortable. Like, I just want to do my business. I don't want all that extra stuff. But you say how you feel that this is a Joseon Belasco movie, but with all these references to Yasujirō Ozu, in any way do you feel that this could be kind of like an Ozu movie? I don't see it, but I was wondering if you could.
You know, when I think of Ozu movies, I think of family dynamics, and especially when there's a beautiful young woman who, you know, needs to be married off.
Yeah.
That's what I think of as like the classic Ozu movie. And I don't think that this is, but I think it's meant to make him really exotic because she, Joseon Belasco's character, Renee, is very intellectual and mm-hmm. she reads a lot and has been sort of closed off into her apartment ever mm-hmm. since her husband died and has accepted that. She's not thinking love's going to show up. And even when she meets him, she, you know, isn't all that keen on pursuing mm-hmm. it because, again, she doesn't want to try to live above her station or have people, you know, mock her for thinking that she's more than she is. So to make him somebody that exotic, you know, mm-hmm. Japanese with different food, different ways of doing things, you know, you take off the shoes and you wear the slippers and he's got his own screening room.
That's
and
he a has, nice screening
He
room.
Has not just an that. Ozu movie, but a really esoteric one that nobody has seen.
Yeah, very rare. Well, actually, she had it. Didn't she bring it over? I think she brought it over.
I thought she brought the cakes. I can't remember well, okay, who's well, got so the movie, but yeah, it's yeah. How did she get her hands on that movie? I can't even find it.
Does Criterion have it or?
It's not released yet, as far as I know.
Wow, or that's a real one. That's a deep cut right there. But yeah, but I feel that character is just the way of her getting. He was the one to get her out of her shell because you know that little reference to Anna Karenina. And he's like, oh, you know, she's a lot smarter than people give her credit for. And that's kind of how this whole thing started.
Yes.
So of the three, what other performances do you like? One I liked is the neurotic mother, just how she rehearses the same dinner speech over and over again about the psychoanalysis she goes through about her dreams. And I thought that was really funny.
I liked the character of Renee's friend who loans her the dress and, you know, mm-hmm. they can talk frankly about what they think about the other residents, how she's, you know, once Mr. Ozu moves in, she decides she's going to clean for him and make more money. And she gets to tell one of the tenants, you know, too bad, I'm not working for you anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that made Renee's character, that was essential to have a character like that. Otherwise, Renee's character would just be a total recluse.
Mm-hmm. And so that woman, she was like a maid?
She was a maid who worked in the building unit. She's also the one who swipes the dress from the dry cleaner.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's why Renee says, oh, she's going to feel so terrible because she was run over by a dry cleaning truck.
Yeah, it's the person she got the dress from.
Yes.
And so... I was reading that this was based off a book by Muriel Barbery. I was wondering if you've had a chance to read it.
The book is fantastic. The book goes into even more detail about how Renee is very philosophical and intellectual and is hiding that. And if you're a book reader, of course, when you're reading a book and you're a book reader about people who love books, it's sort of a circular thing. I thought the book was fantastic.
So I guess... continuing the never-ending debate of is the movie or book better, you would probably say the book is better?
Yeah, the book really is better, but there are some things about the movie that I absolutely love. One thing that I learned from seeing it at the film festival is that all of that animation that's in there...
Oh, yeah, that was really good animation.
Really good animation was done by students.
Wow.
Yeah, they actually had a call for entry, and they used student work to get some of those animations together, which I thought was really pretty cool.
Like college students or just...
College students.
Okay.
Well, I mean, art students.
Okay, from any French university?
I'm not sure what all the particulars were, but they used student work, which I thought was really pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was just so well done. And even the drawing that Paloma does.
Mm-hmm. Especially of Renee. That's a really good drawing.
It is a really good drawing. And even Mr. Ozu. And the, mm-hmm. you know, the leaves fall. You know, now that it's even more like death mm-hmm. foreshadowing. Leaves falling off trees.
A bit similar to the opening sequence in Juno, a little bit.
Yes.
And So you're talking about this. This definitely feels like, for me, a film about book lovers. You know, sort of, you know, just like the Burgess Meredith character in that Twilight Zone episode, just the people who are heavy into books, who just love reading, and, you know, just sort of, you know, how it's more them, and just the people who sort of look down on them, like, this person reads books, you know, like that.
Yeah, it's also, it's about squirreling away pieces of yourself that you think people won't like. Mm-hmm. And when you think about Paloma's character, you know, she also is very, she has thoughts that really aren't safe to express in her house. I mean, even when, you know, they have guests over and someone starts talking about the game of Go, mm-hmm. and they have it all wrong, you know, who invented it and how the name of the game and everything. She tries to correct them and she gets sent to her room.
Yeah.
Of course, nobody wants kids, you know, correcting everybody. But by the same token, she was right. Mm-hmm. So she's shut down and told, no, we've already decided what you are. And it's not somebody who knows anything about Go. Mm-hmm. So shut up. Go to your room. Close the door, which is really what Renee is doing.
Don't make the adults feel stupid because they don't know it and you do.
Not only that, but that's not what we have prescribed for you to mm-hmm. behave like. So fall into line. Mm-hmm. And if that's who you are, then you have to hide it.
Yep. And so you were talking a little bit about the film. It's been going on a lot of festivals and stuff. Now, looking at the internet, not a lot written about it or talked about it. Is when it came out 7 years ago, was this a big hit?
It was a big hit, and it certainly did really well at the festival. Of course, Josie Ann Balasko was there to promote it. And, I think it did really well. She does really well. She's very well regarded in France.
Yeah, because she's won quite a few César Awards, which is the French equivalent of the Oscars.
Yes, she's trying to think who would be her contemporary here. Maybe somebody like Jodie Foster. But Jodie Foster doesn't necessarily do things that are that quirky. Mm-hmm. But in terms of someone who's been around for a long time and has name recognition.
Would like a Meryl Streep be a good reference?
Meryl Streep's more of a powerhouse actress. I don't know that I would say Josie Ann Balasko is a powerhouse actress. She's more of a producer, director, screenwriter, and does some acting.
How about Kathy Bates? Because she does a lot of behind-the-scenes
stuff.
Maybe
Kathy Bates.
Okay. And so, now, once again, somebody else who has a really short list is the director herself, Mona Achache. She's done, I think, two other movies, but there's not a lot talked about. There's just very little talked about her, information. So have you seen any of her other work?
I haven't, and it's funny because I know that she directed this movie, but I always think it was Josie Ann Balasko. Mm-hmm.
And so I guess you talked a little bit more, so go into more about sort of the film career. I know, even though she's not the director of this movie, but the film career of Josie Ann Balasko. If you could recommend just like one or two movies by her to the audience, what would you recommend?
Well, one movie that I really like of hers is called My Heroes, which came out in 2012. And it's about a guy in a dysfunctional marriage, but he also has this strained relationship with his parents. The mom is played by Josie Ann Balasko, who are hiding a kid in their house so that he doesn't get deported. Okay. And it's just a tremendously warm and funny movie in the way that her movies always are. She always kind of plays the same character in a way, you know, the sort of brusque mm-hmm. but wise older woman. French Gigolo, which is also called Cliente, definitely one to watch because she's amazing in it. And also her husband's in it,
okay.
George Aguilar. And that has some really mm-hmm. funny moments in it as well. It has Natalie Bai as the woman who is her older sister, who is actually soliciting the services of the male escorts, which, you know, it's all done on the internet now, of course.
Oh, yes.
And it that came out right at the moment, I think, that French unemployment hit 10%. So it resonated even more yeah, what are we going to do to make some money? But of course, she makes it a little bit different. French Twist, of course, where, you know, the plumber takes off with the wife. wonderful movie. But she's also, she was in 1976's The Tenant. But, you know, it seems like everybody was in that movie. It's a Roman Polanski film. It's a thriller. It's got Isabella Gianni in it and a whole bunch of name brand people. So pretty much if you go back and look through a lot of movies from the 70s, she was involved in a lot of those films. But I would say those were the highlights.
Okay. And one thing I did forget to bring up was this was a score by Gabriel Uret. And he's also big here as an Oscar-winning composer. I think did the score for The English Patient, which of course won Best Picture. So, any thoughts about the score in particular?
Nothing comes to mind in particular. How about you?
Nothing much. It's a little bit there, but I thought he's a big name, so I thought that was interesting that he did this little small film. So, okay, we're getting close to the end of my questions here. Is there anything that I haven't covered or forgot to talk about that you want to bring up now?
I think we've covered everything.
Okay, then
I don't even have a last-minute quip.
Okay, and so then just last question I'll have is just tell us how you would bring this film into your French film course.
Well, I definitely wanted to tell my students about Josiane Balasko because even though she is well-known in France and has been in lots of stuff, she's not necessarily one that they would have already heard about. You know, if you went to see these movies at the Charles, yes, you would know who she was, but they're not movies that would end up in the regular theaters. So, but I don't want people to not have heard of her because I think she does really interesting movies. So I will be showing this movie, The Hedgehog, and hopefully they haven't seen it yet.
All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about French director Mona Achache in her hit 2009 film, The Hedgehog. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Tuesday at 7, Saturday at 1, or anytime at our new podcast page at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category of Armchair Directors. Professor Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm Alex Baker, saying all happy families are alike.